I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, read between the lines. The White House pushes back after war plans were allegedly messaged to a journalist by mistake. Talking it over. U.S. negotiators remain in Saudi Arabia to work out a ceasefire in the Russia-Ukraine war. Fighting for life. Learn all about the International Day of the Unborn Child with Father Thomas Petrie and how it ties into the solemnity of the Annunciation. Plus, message received. Thousands of letters for the Holy Father arrive on a daily basis from around the world. We talk to people who make sure they get to the Pope. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the solemnity of the Annunciation of the Lord. Our top story tonight, fallout over a text message. President Donald Trump says that you have to learn from every experience. And he defended his national security advisor, saying that it was very unfair how he was attacked. His remarks come in the wake of a security breach that involved a journalist allegedly seeing war plans against Houthi terrorists that he was not supposed to see. And it all happened in a group chat on the encrypted messaging app Signal. White House correspondent Owen Jensen brings us that update. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Tonight, it does not appear that anyone will be losing their job over this. The president saying today there is no perfect technology, that our national security is stronger than it's ever been, and that there was no classified information.
As U.S. forces attack Houthi positions in Yemen, the National Security Council is looking into how a journalist number was mistakenly added to a Signal group chat. That journalist, Atlantic editor-in-chief Jeffrey Goldberg. In addition to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, it included Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and Tulsi Gabbard, Trump's Director of National Intelligence. Goldberg said he received the Signal invitation from Mike Waltz, President Trump's national security advisor, who was also in that group chat. Today, President Trump telling reporters,
This certainly will look at this, but the main thing was nothing happened. The attack was totally successful. It was, I guess, from what I understand, took place during, and it wasn't classified information. So this was not classified. Now, if it's classified information, it's probably a little bit different.
We are looking into and reviewing how the heck he got into this room. But I'll tell you what, the world owes President Trump a favor. Under Biden, global shipping was shut down. Pinprick attacks, months between them, our destroyers being fired upon dozens of times. President Trump took decisive action with his national security team.
And asked about it yesterday in Hawaii, the defense secretary emphasized,
nobody was texting war plans.
We asked former CIA operations officer Claire Lopez to put the case in context. She is the founder and president of Lopez Liberty.
I think this is a very, very serious intelligence security lapse. What I would like to hear from that leadership is an acknowledgement that they take it very seriously.
Lopez also told us,
the very fact of those top leadership figures of the intelligence community meeting together all by itself is of intelligence interest to our adversaries.
President Trump also said today he believes Mike Waltz does not need to apologize and that he thinks he's doing his best. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
The fallout over the security leak is also a hot topic on Capitol Hill as intelligence officials testify before a Senate committee and disagreement breaks out over the severity of the issue.
A national political...
Hold on.
No, you hold on. No, Director Radcliffe,
I
asked you a yes or no question and now you hold on. A national political reporter
you can characterize
was made privy
the White
to
House
sensitive information about imminent military operations
mistake,
against a foreign terrorist
an inadvertent
organization.
Mistake of adding a reporter.
And that wasn't a huge mistake.
Lawmakers in both parties say it is critical to find out exactly what happened and how. Democrats are demanding an investigation and some Republicans are calling for accountability.
At the end of the day, you make mistakes, and I'm sure President Trump has made his voice be known to the SecDef and the people involved, because that's a pretty scary situation.
There's got to be a consequence for this. We need to be told how this happened, what they're doing to fix it, and whoever was responsible for this kind of thing should be severely disciplined.
Some Democrats want more serious consequences.
Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth should resign. He recklessly texted operational details of military strikes, including time, place, location, and sequencing of those strikes, to a journalist.
But other Republicans, including House Speaker Mike Johnson, do not think congressional action is necessary.
I don't think anyone should have lost their job over that, because an errant number, found its way onto a dialogue between leaders. It's a mistake, but we got to correct it going forward, and they will.
At a hearing about world threats, two of the nation's top intelligence officials who were on the chat sought to downplay the seriousness of the security breach.
My communications, to be clear, in a signal message group were entirely permissible and lawful, and did not include classified information.
No classified material that was shared in that.
So then, if there are no classified material, share it with the committee. You can't have it both ways.
Some Democrats even blame Senate Republicans.
This signal chat, really, it should have been called the John Thune Club, because ultimately the Senate Majority Leader owns this incompetence. He is the one, along with Senate Republicans, who confirmed a group of characters who are manifestly unfit and unqualified for the offices they hold.
So what happens next is up to the Republican-controlled Congress. Only the committee chairs or party leaders could call for formal investigations.
All right, and joining us now with more is Michael Prejean, senior Middle East analyst at the Hudson Institute. Michael, good to be with you. A lot of questions here, but first, for those who may not be familiar with Signal, that encrypted messaging app, tell us more about it, and why would those in the president's cabinet use it, especially for something such as supposedly war plans?
Oh, well, thanks for having me. You know, you can use the app to coordinate a meeting, or to say, hey, let's catch up at this airport at this time. But you should not be using the app to discuss an imminent strike on a foreign terrorist organization. You can be on Team Trump, I voted for President Trump, and then criticize his team for this failure. This was a mistake, this was a failure, and each principal should know that hostile intelligence agencies are looking for these principals to be using their cell phones and their office phones to dial in into an encrypted app. And they have the capability to intercept it. They have the capability to penetrate it. And this was an unforced error. And I do believe you can criticize the Trump administration while supporting it. You know, criticizing individuals inside that made a mistake is actually supporting the president.
Yeah. Michael, what forms of communication, you know, would be deemed appropriate and secure in this type of situation, especially people, you know, in the position as Secretary of Defense or National Security Advisor?
These conversations should be, we will link up when I get on the ground inside of a SCIF, a secret compartment, a room that is basically set up for classified information. A temporary SCIF can be set up. And that's how these conversations take place. They never take place over a phone, ever. The meeting time can be set up over the phone or the encryption app. The content should never be discussed here. Simply just setting up the meeting inside of a controlled facility, a SCIF, Secured Controlled Intelligence Facility, is what it stands for.
Michael, so much more we can talk about. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your insights.
Right.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, a new report says that the Trump administration plans to freeze tens of millions of dollars to certain organizations, including Planned Parenthood. The Wall Street Journal says that the funds will not be available while the administration examines whether the money was used toward diversity and equity efforts. The freeze would impact Planned Parenthood and many of its affiliates and totals around $120 million just this year. And with a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a shocking claim in Kansas, a woman says that she got an abortion and then made a terrifying discovery. And now she's taking legal action. We speak to her attorney. And children around the world write to the Holy Father. We go behind the scenes to show you how their letters got to the Pope. Welcome back. And And we start with the war in Ukraine, where the United States says an agreement has been reached to ensure safe navigation in the Black Sea. This comes after 3 days of talks in Saudi Arabia with Russian and Ukrainian delegations to try and take steps toward peace. The White House adds that the U.S. will help restore Russia's access to the world market for agricultural and fertilizer exports. Meanwhile, Russia says that Ukraine struck civilian energy facilities while Russian forces launched a ballistic missile and more than 100 long-range strike and decoy drones into Ukraine overnight. And in the Middle East, airstrikes continue in Gaza, where Palestinian doctors say 27 people have been killed. This comes as the United Nations cuts its staff in the region by one-third. The UN says the cuts were made for both security and operational reasons. Israel resumed attacks on the area 1 week ago, ending a fragile ceasefire. Israel has also cut off all food, medicine, aid, and other supplies to Gaza for the past 3 weeks.
There is no life in Gaza. We receive one box of aid per month, which is barely enough for me and my children. My three children are orphans. I've taken them all over Gaza, but no organization has given me a single shekel.
Meanwhile, in Israel, protesters took to the street demanding that the government reach a deal that would release the hostages from Gaza. An advocacy coalition is suing the Trump administration over an executive order to dismantle the Education Department. The group, which includes the NAACP, says that Trump is overstepping his authority and the department cannot be eliminated without congressional approval. The department has not closed entirely, but it has announced that half of its staff would leave through layoffs and voluntary buyouts. The coalition is seeking a court order to prevent further dismantling. A lawsuit in Illinois alleges that an abortion doctor left half an aborted baby inside of a 32-year-old woman. The woman told the Kansas City Star that after the abortion, she felt extreme pain in her abdomen. She says the abortion doctor told her to take some Tylenol and then a laxative. It was only after going to the emergency room that she learned the source of the pain. The author of the piece, Melinda Hennenberg, writes in part, "If I quoted from the legal filings absolutely gruesome medical report and expert testimony, you would not be able to eat today. If it happened this one time, and I believe that it did, then we should do everything we can to prevent it from happening again." Now, it is impossible to ignore the violence and the absolute horror of abortion. And we do want to warn you that the details of this case are truly disturbing. But we thought the legal claims were important enough to bring this story to you all. All right, and for more on this, we turn now to Richard Craig, the attorney for the plaintiff. Richard, thank you for joining us today. I understand that your client wishes to remain unnamed, which, of course, is understandable, considering the circumstances. That said, what more can you tell us about what happened and the impact this has had on her?
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me. So what occurred here was my client presented to the Equity Clinic in Champaign, Illinois, on April 1st, 2023. She was 22 weeks along gestationally, and the abortion procedure at that gestational age is actually a two-day process. So she underwent the first portion of the process that day and was sent home. And then she returned the next day to complete the procedure. And then following the completion of the procedure, the defendant, Keith Kendall, caused a note to be entered into the record that he had examined her, and these are his words, "Products of conception were visibly inspected and confirmed to be complete." Well, that could not have occurred because the products of conception, again, his words, were not completely removed. And in fact, half of the body, there are actually films in the record that suggest to me it's more like two-thirds of the body, but at least half of the body remained in my client. Mm.
This is so hard to hear. I can't imagine any of this. Obviously, truly traumatic experience. Why do you think that she felt the need to go public with her story and share it with others?
Well, I have to tread lightly here because I know the answer to that question, but I'm prohibited by the attorney-client privilege from communicating to people what she has said to me. Mm-hmm. But I think that in general, in addition to just seeking redress for just a horrific event that occurred, I think that we would all like to see perhaps a better understanding of what this procedure is, how the human body resists it, and the really bad complications that can occur when you undergo it. So those would be the broader goals of this litigation.
Yeah. Well, Richard, we're going to continue to follow this and pray for her. Richard, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, it gives new meaning to the term bulk mail, 330 pounds worth of letters every day for just one person. We'll tell you who. Plus, a closer look at an initiative for the unborn started under Pope John Paul II. As we mentioned, today is the solemnity of the Annunciation of the Lord, which means it is also International Day of the Unborn Child. The event originated in Argentina with Pope St. John Paul II playing a major role in its establishment. The day is dedicated to commemorating all unborn children, celebrating their lives, and advocating against abortion violence. Additionally, Pope John Paul II published his encyclical Evangelium Vitae on this day back in 1995, which defends the right to life. And joining us now to discuss this and more is Father Thomas Petri, president of the Pontifical Faculty of the Immaculate Conception at the Dominican House of Studies. Father Petri, always great to be with you. So tell us a little bit more about International Day of the Unborn Child and why it falls on the Feast of the Annunciation.
Well, it's the Feast of the Annunciation today, which, Christmas is celebrated December 25th. And so 9 months earlier, we celebrate March 25th. The Annunciation, when the angel Gabriel came to the Blessed Mother. This is the day when the Word made man. This is the day that the Son became incarnate in the womb of the Blessed Mother. And so it's very fitting that we also use this day to celebrate unborn children. It's important to remember that although the angels are higher than us in nature, because God became man, because he became, in fact, an unborn child who was then eventually born, because he became a man who suffered and died for us, he has placed us even higher than the angels, because now he has shared his divinity with our humanity. And that's really the most important thing to understand about the dignity of the human person. Every person, every unborn person, every born person, regardless of status, regardless of ability or disability, is in fact not only made in the image of God, but is now called to eternal communion with God. And that's why the church has always and will always defend the right to life from conception to natural death.
Yeah, and how should we observe this day?
Well, obviously going to Mass is a very important day, an important part of the day. But, you know, in fact, celebrating this great goodness that God became one like us in all things but sin, and that the Blessed Mother herself accepted the vocation, if you will, to be the Mother of God. And for all of those who are pregnant or know people are pregnant, to really not only give thanks for the gift of life that so many women are today carrying, but also to pray for healthy deliveries and healthy babies, to see children as a gift of life, a gift to not only the parents, but to the church and to society. Sadly, we live in a very commercial society right now, and so life is not as valued as it should be, as something that's given by God and elevated by God to communion with him.
Yeah, Father Petri, we're almost out of time, but is there anything else that you would like people to know about today?
I think it's just a really important fact that St. John Paul II chose this day to inaugurate the International Day to remind us of the importance of unborn human life, and to remember the great dignity of our species is not something that we have earned. It is something that has been given to us by God himself, especially through his son, who on this day became a man like us in all things but sin.
Father Petrie, always good to be with you. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
God bless you, Tracy.
On Friday night, the faithful around the world have gathered to pray for the Holy Father ever since he was admitted to the hospital last month. And they're also sending him letters, including some from children. And often the Daily Mail weighs more than, get this, 300 pounds. EWTN Vatican contributor Zovia Zubek has more.
Since his hospitalization, the Italian postal service, Poste Italiane, has been flooded with handwritten letters addressed to the Holy Father, filled with love and support from all around the world. At the sorting center near Fiumicino Airport, employers have been busy redirecting this correspondence straight to the Vatican and to the Gemelli Hospital as well. Each day, they see a staggering scale of human outreach.
Recently, since our Holy Father has been hospitalized at the Gemelli Hospital, we have been registering an increase in the volume of correspondence, both from home and abroad, up to a daily maximum of 150 kilos.
Usually, the Pope receives about 100 letters a week, but in these past few weeks, he has received several thousand every day. Handwritten letters are a disappearing art, so receiving them today is much more intentional and holds deeper meaning, especially when they are written with little hands.
One of the things we noticed while sorting through this correspondence is that many letters are written by children. So, with some surprise, we imagine that, in general, a young person, a child, would use more advanced technological means. Yet, returning to the use of paper always has a special charm.
The letters have not gone unnoticed by the Pope. On the 10th day of his hospitalization, the Holy Father thanked all for their closeness and consoling prayers, saying, "I have recently received many messages of affection, and I have been particularly struck by the letters and drawings from children." For the postal workers, it's a special responsibility to ensure each message of support and prayer reaches its destination.
With this increase in volume and correspondence addressed to the Pope, all operators say they feel great pride and passion.
As Pope Francis begins his journey of recovery at Santa Marta, messages of support continue to pour into the Vatican. Post offices all around Rome are keeping up with the high demand to ensure that this simple yet powerful act of connection remains uninterrupted, allowing expressions of solidarity and love to reach the Holy Father. In Rome, Zofia Tubak, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.